This is Nature Boy on K-Chung Radio, 1630 AM, broadcasting live from Chinatown, Los Angeles, and online at kchungradio.org/stream. Today is Sunday, February 4th, 2018, Super Bowl Sunday.
Yay.
Woo! I'm Michael and...
We love sports.
I'm here with Jess and John.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Sorry for moving the mic. So Nature Boy is a science podcast on K-Chung Radio, and we are all PhD candidates at the University of California.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, yeah. Semantics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're qualified, I guess.
Yeah, qualified to tell you all of these things.
Yeah.
On John's, paper, you should
John's
tell
an adjunct faculty member now at Riverside Community College.
Wow. So.
Super true, yeah. Warping the minds of tomorrow.
Wow, that sounds very official.
Today on Nature Boy, the main topic is neuroscience, which is probably pretty relevant for the Super Bowl, but we'll get into that.
Definitely something that we are qualified to talk about, too.
Oh, yeah. As a bunch of botanists.
Yeah.
We're all...
Plants have brains.
Oh, my gosh. Have any of you, The Secret Life of Plants, have any of you read that? Oh, here, I'm going to pull this microphone a little bit. Enjoy that squeaking sound. How's that?
Is that like a Michael Pollan book?
No, that's The Botany of Desire.
Oh, I've read that. That sucked.
It's a little bit dull. All his writing's a little bit dull. Yeah. Well, he's a listener, so let's not offend him too much.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm sure he is. Yeah.
Sorry, Mike. Take it easy. Secret Life of Plants, it has all these sections postulating different types of plant intelligence. And it's really weird. It was a big hit, I think, in the 60s and 70s.
That makes sense.
Yeah. A lot of stuff about you can... put a flame near a plant and it'll react in some way that they could measure. I think it's all hocus pocus. Well, but
I've had many people actually ask me, is it true if you talk to plants or like play music for plants that it's good for them?
That's always a project at the science fairs.
Yep. I remember when we did the judging, we saw them do it a couple times. Yeah.
And they never see a difference. Or no, actually sometimes they do, supposedly. And, like, it's probably because, like, the plants are grown in different, like, parts of the room or whatever, but, like...
Not using controls.
Yeah, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, definitely the plants that I talked to grew better, and, like, and my conclusions are that they just were in a better environment, so...
I usually push the kid down and say, where's your peer review?
You know? This is not going to get into nature.
You're nothing, and your science is weak.
Yeah. Well, that's vaguely related to the topic, though. I mean, plants having intelligence or something, or, like, you know, thoughts.
Yeah, that's a pretty good segue. You just pulled there.
But not yet. I did want to talk about this other thing first, which was a new development that came out this week. Yes, from Stanford Medical Center, but they have a new vaccine, or it's a type of vaccine that they modified to basically attack cancer cells, and it's been really, really successful in trials with mice, and it's been able to cure, like, several types of cancers. Let me see here. This is not good radio.
Well, from what I heard...
Well, it's worked on more than one type of cancer. I think the main one that they've tried is leukemia.
That's a hard one.
Yeah, but other ones, too.
hard to pronounce.
Eliminated tumors on the bodies of these mice, I guess, and it worked for not just leukemia, but also breast cancer and a couple of other ones that I cannot seem to find here.
You can't read it, or...
It's a long article.
This is the letter that goes like, this is a Q.
But yeah, it's and even if the cancer has been recurring, or what do they call?
Chronic?
It's not chronic, but...
metastasized?
Acute?
Metastasized or... Recurring? No.
Recurrent?
Whatever. If it's come back, it's successful like the second or the third time around as well. So it's one of the most promising like cancer treatments that's been discovered. No, I think it is something similar to relapse. But
you relapsed into your cancer addiction. Just one more taste.
I felt like I was close. Like with that word.
then the word came out.
Yeah. It is close, I think. Remission.
There, but that's when you're better.
Wait, no one's gonna come to my classes if we keep going down this road.
Okay.
Remission's when it goes away for a little bit.
Maybe you are not in remission anymore.
Something. There's a term for it in oncology.
Re-cancer.
Yeah. Re-cancer.
Neurobiology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This vaccine's been very successful in destroying cancer cells. Again, it's only in mice trials right now, but it's one of the more promising.
Oh, we just got a message that reoccurring is correct.
Reoccurring.
Okay. Oh, good. Yeah.
So that's cool. And in case people are wondering why studies are always done in mice, like it doesn't necessarily transfer well to what's going to happen in humans. But people use mice in research a lot because mice can be really genetically similar to each other if they're in the same cohort. So that's why, like you were talking about, the kids using bad controls are like not accounting for their, you know, for different variables. And so mice, it's easy to kind of control for that because they're basically the same identically or genetically.
Yeah,
because
there's different organisms at different degrees of genetic mixing during the generation of offspring, right? Yeah.
So, and they can, you know, like mice research is such a developed field now, or animal research, that you can order, just like for plants, you can order Arabidopsis with different mutations, you can order mice with different mutations, so they have, like, certain cancers that they get all the time.
You can order a mouse with cancer?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can.
Like, it was the
or they have, they're like, they're predisposed to developing. That's the thing with that GMO paper.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. Yeah.
He used mice that were like supposed to get tumors, and then he like fed them
all the corn,
the GMOs, and then they got tumors, and it's like, well, they're supposed to get tumors.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're like cancer research mice.
Yeah. Okay.
So
on today's episode about cancer.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about cancer. So this is a very cool vaccine, and I hope it does well in long trials.
Yeah. Well, did you say how it works? Like, what makes it different?
It's in here.
Oh, okay.
You put the stuff into the cancer.
It's just a headline that I'm going through. Yeah, it's a virus that they used. I don't know what makes it different about other, because I know that they've used viruses before to try and treat cancer. A lot of the times, it's not really like killing the cancer, right? It's like how it's delivered into the body and whether it persists and can actually like differentiate between cancer cells and human cells. Mm-hmm. So I guess something about this is...
Well, because with chemotherapy, like, I guess what I was getting at was that, like, with chemotherapy, that's more of like a chemical dump on your body.
Yeah, it's sort of just a shotgun approach. If you damage all the cells and you hope that you damage the cancer cells.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly what's up with this vaccine, but like maybe it's less.
I can read this like paragraph.
Oh, I don't think that's necessary. Yeah. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
It's basically it upregulates like an activating receptor, and then another antibody binds to it. So I think it makes the cancer cells produce more of this, surface receptor. That's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
It increases the regulation of that, the gene regulation, and so they create more of this cell surface receptor, and then I think they're more easily recognized by antibodies.
Well, looking over your shoulder, I saw that there were two components to it, so that would kind of make sense. One marks the cells, and the other one's binding to this and damaging or destroying the cells.
Yes. So that's how it works.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just say it with authority, guys. Say it with authority.
Do you have any science news to share?
Well, sort of. I mean, my science news is related to our topic. We've introduced it when we just digressed.
Well, let's just get into our topic then.
Okay,
So the topic for today is neuroscience, which is like the study of nerves and brain. Of animals.
The study of the nervous system.
Nervous system. Yeah. It's different than neurology, which is like basically the pathology, so brain diseases. So.
Oh well, whoops! I think I mean neurology then.
I think neurology is classified under the umbrella term.
Yeah, there's just like a lot of. I mean, neurology is like a field unto its own, and I mean, people specialize in like one type of, you know, brain disease. So.
One type of brain. I specialize in big brain.
So it gets very specific if you study that, I guess. I mean, I don't know what I'm saying.
I thought it was interesting. Maybe you guys ran into this, too, during like basic research for this topic. I was looking at the different things that were included under the term of neuroscience, right? So it's like neuroscience or neurobiology are sort of interchangeable. And they were saying, you know, like neuromicrobiology is a thing, or chemical neurochemistry is another field. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different subsections there, and some of the newest ones were like neuroethics, neuroeducation, and neurolaw.
Wow. Well, neurolaw.
Where they're trying to use brain imaging and other sort of quantitative measures of mental health, and then use that in sentencing. Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. Like this person was predisposed to violence, so. He didn't, like, hit his wife as bad as the person who wasn't predisposed. It's a dangerous way to go, I think.
I mean, wow. I guess thinking of this, is they just sentenced that teenager girl, the Slender Man girl.
Oh, something happened to her?
Yeah, she got sentenced to, like, 40 years in a mental health facility, not in prison.
I mean, that's still, like, pretty horrible. Now,
in case people don't know, this is, like,
how old was she, like, 12?
They were 12, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
A 12-year-old girl like stabbed a fellow classmate, I think, because some online. She read a story online about.
It's called a creepypasta, Michael.
Creepypasta. Yeah. I don't want to get too into. I don't know the age of our listeners. It's like
creepypastas. Creepypasta is a web community for writing sloppy horror stories.
Yeah.
Usually poorly written sloppy horror stories. And Slender Man is a. Some people do, apparently, seriously enough to kill.
Yeah.
Well, I think she was schizophrenic.
Yeah, she definitely had, like, some mental issues. And then she had, like, another friend in on it with her, but the other friend was, like, more stable.
Going along with it?
Yeah, I don't. Do you know what happened with her?
No. I just know that, like, the main girl got sentenced to 40 years.
Damn, that's so crazy. She's so young.
Yeah.
Yeah. You always got to look at the person who gets away with something like that, though, because I think that girl who's walking free, if she is her friend, she's the one we got to watch. She's the real Slender Man.
Yeah. Okay, so neuroscience.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like the study of nerves in the brain, but I just, when I was researching this topic, I was kind of thinking about, like, how nerves even evolved, or, like, how, like, what animals do have nerves and what animals don't. So, I mean, so the nervous system is like a general feature of animals, I guess. Do you know how they evolved, though? You want to take a guess? Assume.
So these are like the kind of questions that professors ask me and stress me out, because I'm just like, what answer do you want? And when they say it, I'm like, oh, so basic. And I did know the answer, and now I feel dumb. So I don't really know what answer you want. That's stressing me out.
Well, I mean, the way I always see nerves defined are cells that are specialized.
I guess I should say it's not really well understood. So
that's the answer
wanted. It's just like a
that nobody knows.
A disclaimer, yeah. I don't think you have to have a perfect answer.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know, like. I don't have any idea about how it initially started, but I know that, like, in evolution, like, lizards and stuff, they just have, like, the tiny brains. And then birds have a little bit more brain. And then we have even more brain.
The triune brain theory.
But well, actually, no, birds have tiny brains. Like
they do, yeah. But I don't think you're going back far enough. You know, like, not. It starts in the.
Yeah,
ocean,
I'm
ocean
just.
Animals.
I know. That's why I said.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, because like jellyfish have a really rudimentary nervous. It's not even a nervous system, right? They have a nerve ring.
Nerve net.
Yeah.
But I thought it was considered a nervous system.
So like the precursors to nerve cells. So I mean like brains and nervous systems are made out of these individual nerve cells, and like the precursor to those were basically just action potentials in different cells that were like specialized for, you know, if they sense like a osmotic change, like there's a lot of salt or something, so it makes sense that it would be in the ocean.
Depolarizing.
Yeah. It creates these like.
I'm just saying words.
So like sponges are basically the earliest type of nerve, I think. Evolutionarily, and they're not actually, they don't even have nerves. They have like these cells that basically respond to change in osmotic.
They're barely even considered as multicellular organisms, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A sponge is more like a colony of unicellular organisms.
Mm. And then, combs and jellies are like the earliest sort of animals with nerves, like modern day nerve cells, although they don't really have these, they're arranged in nets, and they don't really have like a nervous system. And then it evolved into like groups of nerves, and so like lower animals like worms and stuff have those, and then eventually lizards and birds and us, we have the biggest brain.
No, we don't.
We don't have the biggest brain, but we have the largest brain to body ratio.
Yes.
In the animal kingdom. Yeah. It's actually a term for it. It's called the encephalization quotient. And humans are sitting high on the list. So our encephalization quotient is 7.4 to 7.8, whatever that means. Then the next highest one is the, how do you say this, Tecuchi?
I was going to ask you to please look up what that animal is, because that's fascinating.
It's a type of dolphin.
Oh.
Have you seen what a dolphin's brain looks like?
What have you been doing?
This is what I was looking at because, I was saying that like there's the lizard brain and the monkey brain thing. Like, so that's like we have all of those organs too, and it's essentially like all of the. I'm gonna fuck this up because I am not.
Well, I think you're describing the triune brain theory, the like three different sort of...
Yeah, and we have, like, all the folds in our brain because we just kept acquiring, like, more brain matter.
Kept on eating.
I'm jamming brains in my ears.
And I guess, I don't know, like, people equate that with us, like, having more cognition or, like, things like that. But the dolphin has, like, a lot of, like, folds in its brain. There's a word for that. The folds.
The surface area? Like higher, just the amount of folds.
Yeah, because it's like all been scrunching up.
Yeah, there's something about like the degree of folding in the brain as an indicator of complexity.
Yeah, there we go. Complexity is a word that I was looking for. But, yeah, I don't know.
I have not seen a dolphin brain.
I just saw it online.
Oh,
I wasn't
okay.
Holding it.
I got kicked out of SeaWorld a couple times trying to do that.
Let's run down this list really quick. So humans at the top, 7.4 to 7.8. Tecuchi, whatever, however you say that.
A tuxedo.
It's T-U-C-U-X-I. Tecuchi. that one's 4.5. And then the
freshwater
next one.
Dolphin.
Yeah, it's a freshwater dolphin in South America. Then the next one below that is bottlenose dolphin.
Coming in at number four.
Below that, chimpanzee,
macaque.
Yeah, macaque.
What about your cock?
So I think what makes this different, the encephalization quotient versus just like body to brain ratio, is that this takes into account allometric effects.
Allometric effects.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Like, I think, like, how much, like, for example, how much energy your brain uses and, like, metabolism, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, this is supposed to be a closer approximation of intelligence. So, the higher this ratio is, I guess, the smarter you can say something is. But I think that the interesting thing about this is even though that we have the highest currently, we haven't always had the highest, like, body to brain ratio. There's actually like ancestors of, or very close relatives to humans that are in like our same genus, the Homo genus. there was other ones like Homo floresiensis, I think, and also the Neanderthals had bigger brains, and they were pretty much contemporaries of humans. Yet somehow,
was it Australopithecus or something, isn't that one of them?
I think that's another one.
Yeah,
I don't remember all the names, but there were several human-like species that were kind of around the same time. But humans, obviously, we won out. So there's kind of a couple of different theories as to why, even though we had a smaller brain, we were somehow able to like outsmart these other species.
More folds. It's all about the folds.
Well, anthropologists believe that we were more inclined to like artistic and creative thought than the other species. I don't know. And you know, it's also said that like we're not using our full brain at any given time.
Oh yeah, but that's been disproved.
Yeah.
There's portions of our brain dedicated to active reasoning thought, and there's portions of our brain dedicated to like the autonomic nervous system and just maintenance procedures, you know?
Yeah.
Because it takes constant signals from your brain just to keep your body operating in a way that'll keep you alive.
The lizard brain.
It's all about the lizard brain.
Yeah.
Well, have you heard about the reptile brain? It's something that they talk about a lot in advertising, and it's part of the same theory you're talking about.
Like when you see the color red, you get hungry.
Things like that, exactly. Yeah. So it's all geared to this underlying structure of our brain, which they think is basically built over. So we have the entire reptile brain structure inside of our brains.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say.
I'm totally with you on this one. And so by appealing to that, you can still express the same result as you would in an animal with only that brain structure. But we have these overlying structures in our brains that can sort of override it and redirect it. Yeah. And
thank
also manipulated ourselves. Hey, you're welcome.
Thank
you're welcome.
For clearing it up.
Oh, did you guys know that the largest cell in ever is a neuron?
Yes.
Ever.
It's in the
ever. I didn't think you were going to say it right.
I believe that it is in a giraffe's neck, and it's like up to a meter long.
I thought it was in a whale, but I could be wrong. It's definitely part of the central nervous system, though, because nerve cells in our spine are a lot of them are just elongated single cells that go all the way through the spine, which is insane to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you could pull that thing out, it would be so thin and small that you couldn't, like, see it unless it was all balled up, and it would still be a tiny little ball of brain spot.
I can't believe we just, like, stay together.
It's pretty crazy.
So, anyway, humans, I was coming to a point with this. So, even though we didn't have as big of a brain as the other, human-like species, we were more creative. So, like, our tools actually showed a wider, like, a range of forms. Like, Neanderthals, like, Neanderthals had, like, one type of spear, and they were just, like, it would be pretty consistent throughout a timeline, whereas ours kind of, like, evolved and changed according to, like, how we would use them. Hmm. Also, we were thought to develop language a lot easier or be able to use language more efficiently than the other species. Hmm. And somehow we beat them out.
It could all sort of come from an evolved, like, socializing.
Yeah. And maybe we were just more ruthless and killed them. I don't know.
They could have just been really great guys.
Anyway, we're the dominant species now, so.
Oh, yeah. And we'll always be on top.
Now we have the biggest brain relative to our body size. And that's why we're so smart.
Yeah, so smart.
Okay, I think we're going to take a quick music break.
Where's the coffee? Riding onto it.
Thank you.
Nature Boy on K-Chung Radio, 1630 AM, broadcasting live from Chinatown, Los Angeles. Today is Super Bowl Sunday, February 4th, 2018. And we're talking about neuroscience today on Nature Boy. So, what else did we were talking about something during the break? I just kind of blanked out. Oh, yeah, dolphins.
And elephants.
So obviously we're the smartest animals in the animal kingdom, but other animals are pretty smart too. I recently read that elephants were shown to have like a self-awareness that is pretty rare in the animal kingdom. So they, what these researchers did was they basically made the elephant stand on this like plate thing that was tied to a rope, and they had the elephant pass the researcher like a stick that was tied, so it was like standing on the platform. And it was tied to it, so it had to basically realize that it was its body was on this thing that was tethering it to the ground, and it had to step off of it first before it could pass the stick to the researcher, which is a really simple test, but it demonstrates a level of like self-awareness that's pretty rare, and that actually human babies don't have until they're about 2 years old. So that's pretty impressive. So they're about as smart as 2 year olds.
Oh, great!
Yeah. I don't know. I mean. They could be smarter than that. They probably are smarter than two-year-olds. Babies are pretty dumb.
Yeah, definitely. Babies are dumb. Well, dolphins also recognize themselves in the mirror. They do these, like, little things with their flippers. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but basically it's something that they
jazz hands?
Yeah, it's sort of like dolphin jazz hands, and they don't do that when they encounter other dolphins, so that's how they know that they – and they also are, like, look inside, they open their mouths like they're looking inside their mouth, and so I guess they know that they are not encountering another dolphin. It's like this recognition of themselves, because they're also like, they swim around and like look at their bellies and stuff whenever they're in front of the mirror, and they don't do that like when they're around
other dolphins.
Yeah,
it's wild. Maybe someday we can teach them to put on makeup so they look halfway decent swimming around in the ocean. Ugly dolphins, I hate them.
Jeez, John.
I'm just saying, put on a dress, take the jeans off, you know?
Are you like a traditional dolphin?
Yeah, yeah, I like a nice house dolphin.
A lady dolphin. Okay, so... it is Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, it is.
And
for the third time.
Lots of...
Oh, yeah, that's why we picked this topic.
Really macho guys are ramming into each other with helmets.
Go Eagles!
Bashing in their brains.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably bad for them.
Yeah, I think it might be.
Do you want to talk about that?
Just like a little bit.
Okay.
Sometimes they bonk their noggins and then they go, ow.
Yeah, yeah. So, traumatic brain injury, or like chronic traumatic brain injury, also
CTE.
also called chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Encephalopathy. Encephalophagus.
Encephalopathy. Whatever.
Well, cephalo is the Greek word for head.
Uh-huh.
And pathology is pathos is suffering.
Encephalopathy. Well, I just heard some doctor on YouTube say encephalopathy.
Oh, he's a doctor of YouTube.
There's your problem.
Yeah.
He's the doctor of the study that I'm going to talk about. So, and he works at Boston University. So I was like, whoa, is that how you say it? You know? Whatever.
It's a Boston accent.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
pot, the encephalopathy, and the hominy
I didn't even think about that. East Coast. It's basically like another place.
Yeah.
I guess it is.
Oh, we are on point today, aren't we?
I always am.
Our brains are working real good.
Yeah. My brain's working great. Anyway, so CTE, it's this neurodegenerative disease that you see in people who've had like multiple brain injuries over a period of time. And what happens is essentially this buildup of this tau protein that breaks down the brain.
Isn't that a weird name? Because I read about this protein a lot. They just call it tau?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, it's T-A-U, right?
Yeah. Like
I mean, usually protein, like any science kind of gene or protein, it'll have a very specific name, like a number.
Like
usually.
Leafy?
Yeah.
Clavata.
Clamato.
But this one, it doesn't even seem like it's an acronym. It's just like T-A-U, tau.
Yeah,
tau.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, because it's like not in uppercase letters or anything. It's just tau. Yeah, that is weird. I don't know. Anyway.
I need to dry off. Can you hand me the tau?
But, so it's that protein also accumulates in people who have Alzheimer's, but this is different than Alzheimer's because people who have Alzheimer's also have another buildup of a protein called beta amyloid, also another weird protein name, just plain protein. But something that is, so symptoms of CTE.
CTE?
CTE. Basically, like, the symptoms don't really start to come on until, like, 8 to 10 years after, like, the injuries have started. And, like, the first stage is ADHD. Confusion or disorientation, dizziness, and headaches. And then as it progresses, there's memory loss, social instability, impulsive behavior, and poor judgment. And then when you get into the final stages, it's like dementia, moving disorders, tremors, vertigo, deafness, and depression, and like they are associating suicide with it as well. And then a lot of people exhibit, like, pathological jealousy and paranoia.
Yeah, so do you know what makes it different from Alzheimer's?
Because
it seems like this
CTE?
CTE. Like, I associate it more with, like, kind of anger or, like, aggression, whereas, like, Alzheimer's, I don't really have that association. But I don't really know, like, the difference between them.
Well, so in Alzheimer's, they have a buildup of another protein, the beta amyloid protein, which is also breaking down the brain. And in CTE patients, you don't see that.
It's more tau.
Yeah, and I don't know. This is just like speculation. I think Alzheimer's patients do like have anger and aggression, but they're generally older, and these CTE patients.
They're not athletes.
I mean, serious. Like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, if you're at a time in your life when you, if you become like confused or disoriented, and then you're having like these mental issues, and you're still like really strong, like, and you're able to act out on it just impulsively, and you're not thinking, like, you're gonna do it. Whereas if you're like in your 80s, like, you can only do what you can do, right? You can just be angry and confused in your bed.
He's gumming me.
Yeah, like, I don't know. That's speculation. I didn't read anything about that. But the way that it's diagnosed is basically right now they can only diagnose it after you die, and they look for the buildup of those proteins, and the brains are also like significantly smaller than a normal brain. And in these, like, studies that I read that come from Boston University, something like one said 99% and then another said 87% of football players who have donated their brains to science have all had CTE.
So it was in Boston, so the doctor was like, these guys are wicked retarded.
I don't think that they use that word.
That's from that movie.
Oh, what's that movie? I don't know.
Oh, my God. Matt Damon's in it.
Goodfellas?
He's smart. He's a smart guy. He's a janitor. He goes, how do you like them apples?
Oh.
Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah. Good Hunting.
There it is.
I was like, the chalkboard.
Yeah. It's like Goodfellas Hunting. He goes retarded.
Well, something that I read that's sort of related to this is people used to think that, like, woodpeckers were basically immune to the effects of, like, brain trauma.
oh, because they're always knocking the noggin.
Yeah, because they're always, like, yeah, they do, like, damage their brains quite a bit, actually. And or I don't know if it's damage, but, like, a graduate student, I think, recently decided to see if woodpeckers have the same type of tau accumulation in their brains, and they do have very similar patterns of tau accumulation as, like, seen in football players, basically. But they don't really have any behavioral changes, so
they are pretty erratic.
Scientists, yeah. I mean,
well,
and also
they're all crazy.
How long do they live? Like 4 years or something? Like they're probably not living long enough to really
suffer the negative impacts.
But
yeah.
Birds usually do live a long time.
Or maybe tau accumulation in the brain just doesn't affect how long. I mean, doesn't affect their brain.
Maybe they don't
physiology
need
in the same way that it affects humans.
Well, they don't need that complex of reasoning. You know, I mean, I'd imagine most birds are instinctually driven, really.
Yeah, because the tau protein is like breaking down like all of the gray matter, and like that's what is responsible for like your emotions and your social reasoning and all that stuff. Mm. And birds don't have a lot of that, so it might not matter. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it just doesn't matter for them or but they do have the same type of thing that's happening in their brain.
And is tau protein, is that the same thing that causes the distance between the synapses to widen?
Oh, John, I don't know.
We are plant biologists.
Yeah. Sorry, so maybe I could just I could transition into, if we could.
I think talking about neuroscience is actually kind of, it's probably one of the most difficult topics that we've tried to discuss, because, like, as plant scientists, the nervous system is, like, it's a big part of what differentiates animals from plants.
It's something that we don't have to focus on at all.
Don't have to
studies.
Think about it at all. Yeah. What was I going to say? The other thing that I read was basically, I guess like my science news, was that they recently had a study that shows that it's not really the concussions that are leading to the CTE, but actually just the impact in general. So you could have just a lot of impact and no concussions, and then you could still have CTE. And they are beginning to be able to diagnose it earlier now, like while people are alive, using like MRI imaging.
I'm wondering, why do they have to be dead? Because this is the only way they can stain that protein. Because I know with the woodpecker brains, they had to like take cross-section of the brain, and then they stained it using, like, a silver dye or something. But I don't know if they couldn't visualize it using an MRI or something.
Yeah, well, and I think...
MRI only shows blood flow, right?
Yeah, and I think that now they're, officially associating certain parts of, like, the brain or, like, where, cells that have been degenerated... degraded, whatever, by this protein, and like seeing like where there are patterns, and then now you can do the MRI and you could infer that CTE is occurring in a person based off of like the degenerative patterns you're seeing.
So, in summary, the Super Bowl, you're watching people slowly kill themselves.
Yeah.
For sport.
Well, and
it's kind of like the Romans.
Oh, this is actually incredibly interesting, because one of the primary proofs that so it was always thought up until like what I think like 400 BC. I had notes, but I left my laptop back at the house. Anyways, it was originally thought that the heart was the seat of intelligence, that all reasoning came from your heart, and the brain, if anything, it was involved in perception because we have sensory organs in our head near our brain. Mm-hmm. And people knew the brain existed, like the Egyptians would pull it out when they mummified people, but they thought of it as, what I found the quote was, cranial stuffing, which is really interesting.
Yeah, in my reading actually, I think Egyptians were kind of like the first people to really study the brain.
And they were aware of like brain injury causing a negative effect in people. In people. Like, oh, there's nothing external wrong with him, but he got a knock on the head and now he's all messed up.
Yeah.
Which is how they wrote it. But
in the hieroglyphics.
Yeah, yeah.
Now he's all messed up.
So the dude's wicked retarded. So Galen was some Roman guy. He was a student of Hippocrates, where the Hippocratic Oath comes from. And he observed gladiators, just like the Romans. You see the connections being made here now. He observed that they were having, if they'd been hit in the head, they were getting all messed up. Same thing the Egyptians saw, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the first actual proofs that the brain was involved in some sort of reasoning beyond what Hippocrates and what Aristotle said, which was that the brain regulated heat to the heart, and that allowed for more or less reasoning.
Huh.
So it's kind of interesting, just like the Romans. So, you know, we do learn a lot. It's interesting. We learn a lot about brain injury and the effects from people hitting their heads.
Yeah.
And these football players are out there doing the medical profession a great service. Just like soldiers,
if you want to look at it that way.
We have another listener comment.
Oh, what is it?
Our number one listener, Katie. She says, murderers are usually proven to have childhood brain traumas, which is true.
Serial killers, too.
Serial killers, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about maybe something that could alleviate this. Possibly, potentially.
Stop football.
Stop football.
Don't stop football.
So a new study came out from the University of Manchester, I think.
Read it in a British accent.
Rochester, sorry, not Manchester. University of Rochester.
Never mind.
That showed basically that low levels of alcohol are good for the brain because they upregulate this system in our brain that's called, it was recently discovered, the system, it is called, not the lymphatic system, but the glymphatic system.
That ain't real.
It's like the lymphatic system in that it cleans out toxins in our body, except this does it particularly in our nervous system, and our brain in particular. So what the glymphatic system does is it cleans out toxins like tau and the beta amyloid. That we were talking about earlier, in your brain. It basically flushes it out, and it's especially active during the nighttime, which is another theory as to why sleep is needed or good for us, which we talked about in another episode. Callback. anyway, so the study at this University of Rochester Medical Center was conducted in mice, and they basically found that a dose of alcohol that was equivalent to about 2.5 drinks a day, upregulates our glymphatic system, so our brain can more efficient, like it basically more efficiently clears out those toxins, tau and beta amyloid.
If you drink 2 drinks a day?
2.5 drinks.
Oh, wow. Not 3, though.
Not. this is
a dose. Two.
They used 2 doses, basically a low and a high dose. So the low dose was equivalent to 2.5 drinks. The high dose is equivalent to, I believe, like 7.5 drinks. So
those mice were like cool with 7.5 drinks. I mean, ugh.
The high rate of alcohol actually lowered the efficiency of the glymphatic system. So they had higher accumulation of tau and beta amyloid. But the low levels of alcohol were beneficial, and it helped them to clear out more of that. So, drink more consistently.
Yes.
2.5 drinks a day, I guess.
Just always have a healthy buzz.
I mean, and there's a lot of other literature that suggests that, you know, low levels of alcohol is good for other parts of your body, not just your brain. I think it's supposed to help clear, like, fats from your arteries and things like red wine. It has antioxidants, whatever.
Yeah. So. It's a classic excuse right there. I'm on a health kick. I need to drink this whole bottle. But well, and also smoking lowers your risk for Alzheimer's.
Yes. Yeah. Is that true?
That's completely true.
Yeah. I don't know why I said yes, because I don't know.
I mean,
I mean,
making all the connections.
It was like, it was one of those results from when they actually started to do investigations that weren't funded by the tobacco industry into the effects of smoking, where we got the Surgeon General's warning and all that from. One of the findings, the positive findings, was that it lowered your risk for Alzheimer's, which is kind of interesting. I don't know exactly the action of it, but. Smoke up and drink up, folks. Keep your brain healthy.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know. So the study used the high level dosage like consistently, like every day. So the mice were getting like these doses every day, daily. Every day, daily.
Yeah.
I don't really know who drinks 7.5 drinks a day. I think that's a little excessive.
Yeah, it's more like 6.5, 7. Yeah.
One bottle of wine is one drink.
So right? I think if you drink anywhere between 2.5 and 7.5, you probably get some benefit.
Some brain cleaning from your lymphatic system. Yeah.
I just want to read the CNBC's version of this headline, which is, "A glass of wine after work may be good for your brain, according to science."
Yeah, the science headlines always, they dumb it down so much.
Yeah. Don't trust anything that says according to science or just references science. It's not a good sign.
By the way, this study was also done by a doctor called Maiken Nendergaard.
Maiken Nendergaard?
Maiken Nendergaard, yeah.
Nettergaard.
Nettergaard. Who was the person that published the study, I think, in 2012, basically that... it was the first published paper of the glymphatic system, I think. So it's a relatively new...
Did he name it the glymphatic system? Like that?
I don't know if he named it that.
I mean, I like it. It's just...
But it's called so that because...
It's a little goofy.
Yeah.
There's something else that... there's more of a G involved. It's like
glial
a protein.
Glial cells?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So it's specific to the glial cells.
It does relate.
Yeah.
Okay. And it still sounds
And
it
has a function similar to the...
Lymphatic system.
So they call it glymphatic.
It's all from those Greek and Latin roots, you know. The words all have a meaning.
Yes.
But it makes for some funny sound words, to tell you that.
And how it works is that cerebral spinal fluid basically...
Cerebral spinal fluid!
Spinal fluid. Cerebral spinal fluid. Is pumped into your brain, and that's what washes away bad stuff.
So tomorrow at happy hour, I'm just going to be like...
So clean. Your brain's going to be
My brain is going to feel so clean. Yeah. Just pure. Baptized.
And if you drink a little bit, it helps more cerebral spinal.
You did it again! I'll say it 10 times fast.
A lot of like...
Cerebral spinal fluid.
Yeah, cerebral spinal.
Final spleebal blob.
Cerebral spinal. Okay.
Yes. So we can. We can end with the cerebral spinal.
Our listeners they earned 2 more minutes of our melodious voices.
Okay.
And we got to give it to them, right?
No.
Oh.
Sorry, guys.
I did need to make a mention that the last episode of our show, unfortunately, is currently not available on the radio's archives. So if you've been waiting for the newest Nature Boy podcast, there's been a technical issue, and you may not be getting it. I'm sorry, folks.
We are available.
The marijuana one, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's... I think it was a popular episode.
Is it on iTunes?
No, it's not available on Cajun, so I can't post it onto the podcast website.
I actually had somebody ask me like where they could listen to it, and I gave them the link and stuff.
I will.
It's like the only time someone's ever.
So we are available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and also available for download from the Cajun Radio Archive at cajunradio.org.
Yeah, and if you do a Google search for Nature Boy : the podcast, you know, or you search for Nature Boy the podcast on iTunes or wherever you can find us, we exist.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening. This has been another episode of Nature Boy.
Happy Super Bowl.
Happy Super Bowl, but don't support sports.
Or do.
I mean, it's kind of more fun to think of it as like that. Yeah. Like a show instead of like
enjoy
the
it. You know, they're getting well compensated to destroy their bodies for our amusement. And just take amusement in it. You know?
Yeah.
We're not the Romans.
Sort of. Bye.
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 Once more.